Hey everybody, and welcome back to the Eevee Cafe Takeaway. You know, it's that podcast that focuses on a zero emission future. And this week we are joined by the lovely Mike Seymour from our bronze sponsor, True Charge. Mike, welcome to the show.
How do's? Thanks for having me.
It is our pleasure to be invited into your, I'm guessing that's the man cave, is it?
Boudoir.
As often is the case, I get to work with one of the wonderful members of the team of the Eevee Cafe. And of course, we've got John this week. John, you're fresh off doing a couple all by yourself. How was that for you?
It was quite scary because I had to come up with every question, and I'm not very good at that. So, you know, well, there we are. So, anyway, moving on.
So for those of you that know John, you will know that he is talking through a certain orifice that is not one on public display. Because John is the master questionnaire. He is the hostest with the mostest. I'm always getting out of jail because he manages to produce wonderful questions. Anyway.
Well, so, on that basis then, can I go with the first question? Mike, ooh. True Charge. Yes. Tell us about them. Who are they?
Okay, so True Charge are part of the much larger group, Trueform. Trueform of 50 years experience of street furniture is probably the best way of describing them. Bus shelters, tram stops, digital displays. You've used some of our stuff somewhere, sitting at a train station, at an airport. You've seen us, you've used it. True Charge came about because of the EV market. The infrastructure side of it needs to be there. There's a lot of chargers out there. There's a lot of people selling that. There's a lot of energy providers and all the rest of it. But the infrastructure, the particular infrastructure that True Charge is interested in, there's not many people doing it. That's why we're here.
That's quite clever. So you've got the relationships already with people who are procuring infrastructure for other things, and it's just a logical extension of the brand to make it from Trueform to True Charge, right?
Correct. So what we see is the bun fight to get the business, shall we say, in the form of tenders and all that sort of stuff. And we tend to sort of sit back from that a little bit, wait and see what's happening with it. And then we approach them again, or the people who are bidding, and say, you do the charges, you do the CPO stuff, you do the instally stuff, but you're going to need some of this stuff. And that's where we position ourselves at the moment.
If you operate a fleet of cars or vans, you'll know electric is the future. Transitioning to EVs can appear daunting, but with Europcar, it's effortless. Our long-term EV rentals eliminate the upfront costs, contract commitments, and uncertainty. Instead, you'll get total flexibility, a wide choice of cars and vans, and Europcar's expert support. So, make the switch without the stress and experience Europcarma. Search Europcar Business.
And Mike, you know, that is something that the industry, when I say the industry, I mean the community of the industry has been crying out for some time, because many a time have we stood in the rain in our wonderful English winters and got soggy as we've battled with some of the chargers. Some of them are brilliant and we can get on with them, but one or two, every now and again, we have to reboot and, you know, download an app and do all that. And we're doing it in the wet, but you do something different. Now, I wanted to ask you, has your experience of working in a number of charge point companies in the past, or charge point sales companies, has that kind of brought you to this place of delivering a problem solving solution for the market?
Very much so. When we look at the bigger picture, we see there's a lot of manufacturers out there, or EV OEMs, charge point OEMs out there. And we've seen that go from 10, 15, 20 to, I don't know, there's probably 80, 100 of them now. Some of them are UK-based, majority are shipped in from overseas. And that's through necessities where the CPOs, et cetera, have been concentrating on where can I get my product to screw into the ground. And that's fine. And I've worked for companies that have been looking for those. I've worked for the OEMs. I've done all that. And what I noticed way back when was everyone could get hold of the kit, but then installing it was a hurdle because they had to coordinate all the different elements that are required. But because of the pressures on CPOs and investors generally, speed was of the essence. And there was this sort of hurry up, get them in the ground and move on to the next deal. And what that has left is a picture, if you like, tapestry across the UK of all these chargers that some of them are inappropriately sited, some of them are well sited, but you have to be sort of a member of the SAS or something to use them because they're exposed and hanging off the side of a mountain and stuff. And what we're doing is we're sort of sweeping along behind all that and we're saying, look, these sites are somebody's asset, somebody's paid for this, somebody's owed money on them, and they're just there going to ruin. They're starting to look a bit tatty now, the ones that have been there for 3, 4, 5 years, and the CPOs and the owners of those assets are realizing, oh, I need to change these, I need to do something, the maintenance costs are increasing, all these sort of things. If they'd have just thought about putting some sort of protection there, it'd be better, you know, it'd be funner.
Yeah.
Just, you know, that's what it's all funner. About. Yeah.
Mike. It is what it's all about. And it is great that you guys have seen a challenge and a problem, and it strikes me that this is because, you know, we love to get to the person behind the man that is leading forward True Charge to, you know, into the future, and you're solving a real problem and you've articulated it very well. We've also noted that you are prone to slight exaggeration in terms of hanging off the side of a mountain, but anyway, that said
should fit in well with us then, mate.
I know, exactly right. We've got at least 1 million followers. but that said, it speaks of your foresight. And I look back to a time in your career where you pioneered a new business. And let's just talk about you. What was that sort of, what was the driving force for you back before really EV charging and things like that were popular? What was the energy that drove you to do that?
So there's a couple of things really with it. I'd come from an industry that had got a little bit stale, the photocopying world. It got a little bit stale. I'd been in it for a while. And then digital photocopiers turned up where you could print through your photocopier. And it was a bit out there, the thinking at the time. And all the old guard were going, this is never going to work. This is never going to take off, blah, blah, blah. And I thought, well, it will. You know, you just need to learn how to explain it to people and what the benefits are, rather than complaining about the fact that those copiers cost twice as much as a normal one. Sell the benefits. So I got used to being in that sort of environment where my colleagues would be doing it old school and I'd be trying to forge ahead with something else. So that sort of industry changed as it did. The EV side of things, I remember seeing a guy in a newspaper. He looked a bit shabby and a bit tatty, and he stood on a pavement next to a Mark 1 pod point unit or something of that nature. It wasn't in straight. It had weeds growing around it. It was... had algae on the front, but he was going,
it was hanging off the side of a mountain.
Well, it was at the bottom of the mountain, it'd already fallen off. But to me, I thought, right, okay, this guy, this would have been about, I don't know, 2017, something like this. This guy's he's probably early CPO. His thinking was, I should charge people to use this charger and I need to put them in the ground. That got me interested in EV hardware. EV charger hardware. And then I looked around, I saw it, I saw that nobody was really pushing them properly because EVs weren't really a thing. And I thought, well, this is great. There's no competition. All I've got to do is sell charge points. So I did that. And then the industry woke up and the big boys turned up, your Octopuses, your Omis and all this sort of thing. So as a supplier of domestic charge points at the time, the big boys went, And it was, I couldn't compete, and that was that. And I sold it, actually. It went on all right. Now, when I look at the EV industry, there's so many opportunities that are similar to that. All you've got to do is think slightly different to everybody else, and voila, there's your marketplace. So I enjoy approaching people and say, did you know? And they go, oh, no, I didn't. Well, I've got a solution here. And it's not inventing a problem. It's focusing people on a problem that's acknowledged. If you think about all other forms of transport, train, air, and cars, if you think about the infrastructure to service that industry, we've got canopies there, we've got shelters, train stations, waiting rooms, all it's getting nicer and nicer and nicer instead of a mouldy old bench on a platform. Forecourts, fuel forecourts, they've got the canopies, they've had them for 70 odd years. Why don't we do that in the EV world? Well, I don't know why at the moment, but it's my job, I think, or I'm trying to get people to change how they think and perceive it.
It's interesting that you use the word the phrase how they think. So I was just sitting here, Mike, thinking, how do you think? Have you always looked for the opportunity, the entrepreneurial, the opportunity to make friends, the opportunity to make a difference? Or is this something you've learned as an adult, that this is the way that you achieve success?
I think it's not an adult thing. If anything, I'd put it down to I'm a pad brat. So that is to say my old man used to be in the army. So every 2 to 3 years, he'd be posted somewhere else. So Germany, England, Cyprus, Hong Kong. So you'd have this 3-year period to go to a school, meet people, get on with them, knowing that one of you was going to, their dad's going to get posted, and you might see each other a few years later at a different school in a different part of the world. But what it enabled me to do, what it taught me to do, was spot the good uns quick, because you could waste months on a wrong un. Spot the good uns quick, give everybody an opportunity because they're in the same boat as you. So the new boy or girl turning up to school wasn't a subject of bullying and ridicule and all the rest of it. It was important to welcome them, because 6 months before, you were that person. And then the other side as well. So it enables you, my people filter, I like to think, is pretty good. And then, you know, acknowledge that people are different. You know, just because they don't think the same as me doesn't make them a bad person. If they do think they're the same as me, keep them close. You know, the journey will be easier with like-minded people. And I think that in both commercially and socially is something that I've always tried to do. You know, sometimes I don't get it right, but, you know, sometimes that's the way of the world, isn't it? But I think people who are optimistic, believable, truthful and fun, you know, just keep them close.
You'll have a big network of people that you know and are associates and professional contacts. Do you have a wide circle of friends as a result of that nature that you have, this tendency to grab hold of the good uns and get rid of the wrong uns, or do you keep it quite tight and tiny?
Yeah, there's more good uns than you think out there. It's just sometimes they don't know it. So, you know, you've got to encourage them to... You've got to encourage the good bits out of them. It's like managing a sales team, isn't it? The quiet guy in the corner might be the best salesman if you can just tap into what makes him work. But I've got a large associate group. I think that's probably a good way of putting it. And then as far as close people, I suppose, within the industry, through necessity, I think you need to keep a bit of a divide there. And then my actual personal... the circle of friends isn't as big as you may think, and that's a choice, because too much of a good thing, you can't spread yourself around, you can't go to everybody's house at the same time, you can't buy a round for everybody at the same time, you can't go on holiday with everybody at the same time. So in order to keep the quality high, you have to pick and choose a little bit.
Indeed.
And it makes it sound like I get all my mates fighting out the front, doesn't it? The winner can come to the pub with me.
It's like a tender process. Put out a tender. I would like 7 friends, please. I need you to be able to afford your own round. Holiday choices need to be this, this, or this. And of course, you need to be into sustainability.
Yeah, EVs. Yeah, you should have an EV.
Absolutely. But Mike, it's interesting. You've spoken a little bit about, how did you describe it? A pad brat? Is that?
Yeah.
Okay. So a pad brat.
Yeah. So a pad, essentially, if you're in the army, if you're single, you live on in the barracks. If you're married, you get a house called a pad. So your pads lived off camp generally, or they might be on camp, but they were in a house rather than in the barracks. And then you're the subsequent child from that. So you're the brat. So you're pad brat.
Pad brat. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. I've learned something today. My son is in the Remi, so he is not...
Stop right now. Can't talk to you anymore.
But this is it. So... You graduated from being a pad brat, and was it your first role to go into a role within the army? Because I think, am I right in saying tank regiment, so transport like on steroids?
Yeah, it's good work. It's good stuff. So it was a given generally in amongst pad brats that you were going to go and join the army. There's a few that didn't. They went off into retail or whatever, but generally, you do what your old man used to do and all that. My old man was in the signals. I didn't fancy that. It didn't sound cool enough down the pub. So I thought, what does? I know, I'll go and fly helicopters or I'll go and drive tanks. I ended up driving tanks and operating them. And it teaches you the other thing. So the school childhood taught me how to recognise and treat people. The military gave me the, as you'd expect, the discipline. Don't be late, all that sort of stuff, which I still carry today. I'll never go. But it also makes sure that if you've got an objective, you know how to structure it in your head to make sure you get the resources you need in order to achieve whatever the objective is. So True Charge, we're trying to change the narrative and we're trying to get people to think slightly different to how they normally would. So, you know, a canopy or a shelter isn't a nice to have. It's becoming a, you need to have it, otherwise people ain't going to use your thing. And it's learning how to get people around you and systems around you that make that the norm rather than the sort of constant struggle to get people to think like you do. So the military's, I've got a lot to be thankful for about the military. But because of the nature of my head and how I like to do things, I realised that after 5-6 years in the army was great, my upbringing was great, but there's a big wide world out there and I'm not going to be able to do it if I stay here. I'm going to go out there and do that. So that's that. That's how that worked.
You've mentioned a couple of times, Mike, the kind of wiring that you have, the way that your mind works. And you commented before we came on air about the fact that the EV Cafe not only embraces, you know, differences and mental health and well-being, but that we're all a bit special. You know, we all have our own uniqueness. What would you say your uniqueness is? Are you wired differently or do you fit into a normal box?
I don't think anybody's got a normal box these days. You often hear the terminology, don't you, that, you know, everybody's on the spectrum somewhere and all that. And I remember thinking that years ago, you know, everybody's different. Why are they different? It's because they think different. That winds that person up and that doesn't wind that person up. And it's all cued in there. Where do I fit in there? All I try to do is remember or read the room is probably a good way of putting it. If you're behaving in a certain way, but your spidey senses are telling you that it's not working, you need to change. You need to change something. Maybe talk a bit quieter. You need to understand what's going on in the room, you know, and it's, and I think that's true in business as well. You know, if you're talking to a buyer about your product, whatever it is, water coolers, cars, bloody, whatever it may be, you need to be able to tell if they're getting bored, you know, and if they're getting bored, you need to, it's your job, you know, you've done all the right things to get in front of that person. It's your job to keep them engaged. You know, it's not their job to suddenly listen to you differently. So I think that, where do I sit in that sort of thing? I like to think I can read a room. It's not always true, but I think it's just being tolerant of other people. You're not the center of the universe. You know, there are people around you that know more than you do, have done more than you've done. Just get on with it. Just do your thing, you know. Unless someone's been an absolute idiot in the corner, then that's different. Then you should speak up and say, you're an idiot.
And you really do your thing. And in the professional world, you know, you're making a difference. You're contributing to a transition to electric vehicles and a better driver experience, so that people say, yes, it's easy for me to give up my petrol car, my diesel car, because this difference isn't much of a difference. In fact, some might say it's even better. Are you like in every cell of your being, are you an EV convert, or have you had to be dragged kicking and screaming to the altar?
I think, like most people, their first experience with an EV is driven through financial reasons. I was a sales rep. I had me diesel Merc or BM or whatever it may have been, and then Benefit in Kind was tapping on the door. So my first EV was an E350 Merc. So I had a little 2-litre engine, petrol engine, and a tiny battery. I think it's a 10 or 11 kilowatt battery. It had a range of about 12 miles or something. But I didn't buy it for the EV experience. I bought it because it saved me tax. That was it. That was all I was interested in at the time. And then I realised I started playing around with it, and I was trying to see if I could actually get 12 miles out of it around town. And how long does it take to charge? And all these sort of things started happening. And then you start doing the maths, and you start going, if this battery was bigger, because I think that there weren't that many BEVs on the road at the time. So if this battery was bigger, and I charged it at work, and I live 7 miles from the office, and I can blah, 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 blah. Well, hang on a minute, this is a thing. This is gonna change things for a lot of people. And then you move around, you do different jobs and what have you. And then I found myself at an interview saying, I'm gonna need an electric vehicle because I need to practice what I'm preaching. So I went through the Leafs, the e-trons, all these sort of weird and wonderful vehicles, but each one slightly different, gives you more experience, more understanding, charge points, cold weather, apps that don't work, contactless that doesn't work, turning up and the thing is knackered. I've lived it, I've done it, I understand it. And now we are where we are, where I've bought my own EV, so it's not a company vehicle, it's mine, that I travel the country in, and it's, I love it, absolutely love it. So I didn't go kicking and screaming. I did it because I was greedy initially. I was financially greedy. And then it's now evolved into where we are now. So I'll take anybody on down the pub that tries to say EVs are a waste of time, because there's nothing they can bring up that I haven't experienced and overcome.
That's fantastic. And I'm guessing, because, I mean, obviously the use case was proven for you financially, right? And I'm wondering whether this applies to True Charge also, in combination with the Trueform product portfolio, thinking about how do we bring charging and good street furniture, maybe digital communication and all of that sort of stuff to bring protection for the devices And then also a communication platform for advertising and, you know, having effectively a captive audience for a little while and all that kind of stuff. Is the ROI case for street furniture and the protection along with the charging quite strong also? Is it something that, you know, appeals to the greed in many of us?
Yeah. Okay, so good question. What we're trying to do, as I mentioned earlier, is change people's perceptions and how they think. So at the moment, it is binary. A shelter costs X amount and the installation costs that amount. And the shelters, whilst they get designed into the sites, also gets designed out quite quickly because there's a cost involved. Now, the Charles Point operators, of course, are chasing. They need that socket to be profitable ASAP. So they've done their sums, they've done their site viability, they've worked out what they think the dwell time's going to be. They've put the biggest charges in there that they can afford or what they think's appropriate. And then they sort of cross the fingers and that's their focus. And it for the small and medium CPOs, that's how it is. There's concession deals going on. They borrowed money. They've stuck them in the ground, and now the investor wants his money back. So that's it. That's the driving sort of force. Now, as we're seeing CPOs amalgamate and grow and do the other things, like any industry, phone industry, car industry, when it starts, there's loads of players, and eventually they get whittled down, and each time they amalgamate, they get a bit bigger, but they've got more experience. And what we're trying to say is, look, you've got the experience, you know how the game pans out, but once that warranty runs out on that charger, it doesn't matter if it's AC or DC, once the customers that you're trying to attract to your site start wandering off and using other people's chargers, once the board meetings with your investors start not looking how you said they were going to look, you need to look somewhere else to generate the margin. And the way you generate the margin, like anything in life, is you spend up front and then you protect the asset. Yeah. So all we're doing is we're saying, right, in 3, 4, 5 years' time, as the service and maintenance curve goes up on that charger, because it doesn't matter if it's IP67 or whatever it's going to be called in a few years' time, the sun will get it, the weather will get it, wear and tear will get it. Don't matter about a little bit of water and dust. The world carries on. You've got to replace that. So all that hard-fought profit over the last 2, 3, 4 years, all it takes is 3 or 4 calls and a circuit board and a replacement cable has been nicked and all that profit's gone. But in the meanwhile, you've still got your customer coming up and going, well, this doesn't work. This is rubbish, as they're hanging off the side of the mountain. So wouldn't it be better if all that cost that's coming is averted, or certainly you've taken steps to mitigate it. You've got a bit of a cover there. It's well lit. There's a bit of advertising in there. You've got your branding in there, and people are going to use the charger. They become familiar with the brand. It just adds to it. And as that person keeps coming to it, we're seeing more and more EVs being sold. As they start coming, they recommend their friends, and so it goes on. Those chargers are going to look good and work for years and years and years because you've spent a little bit up front. Now, it's a balance. I get it. I've worked for the small CPOs and the bigger ones. I get it. 10 grand on shelters, maybe. I can't spend that because I need that 10 grand for that other site I'm trying to put. Let's try to shift that narrative and say it's not about sticking chargers in the ground. We've learned it's not build it and they will come. It doesn't work like that. So stop it.
Stop.
Stop just firing charges into the ground and going, let's see what happens. And I think that's what we're trying to do with True Charges. We're saying, look, it's your money, it's your asset, but concentrate on developing your brand. Concentrate on customer loyalty. You know, we see Octopus playing around with it now. Come to us, use us, and we'll give you a free whatever. It's not free. The customer experience is, well, I've only got one card and I can go around the UK now and get cheap electricity. Brilliant. That's investing in your future infrastructure. The smaller CPOs, the medium-sized ones, it's difficult for them, but that's where they need to be going, and we can help them get to that.
I guess the logic is that if the customer has a good experience, the driver comes and they don't get wet and it is clean and tidy and they're not tripping over plastic bottles that have been chucked on the ground and all that stuff. If they have a good experience, the utilization rate will go up for each of those chargers because people will come there. And that's the long game that you're actually playing. By investing up front and giving the driver a better experience, more people will come, give you their hard-earned money, justifying the investment that you make in the charger and therefore making it more and more commercially viable. And that's essentially what you're doing. You are leveraging that initial investment in the charger to make sure that everybody knows that if TrueCharge touch it, it's going to be a darn good sight.
Correct. It's making it nice. You know, we've all been there where we've walked into without dropping names, where you've walked into a shop that's a budget shop, shall we say, you know, and the shelves aren't quite stacked right, and it just doesn't look right, it doesn't feel right, and you find yourself going, where's the blah 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 blah, or you can go to a similar store that charges a little bit more, but you know where the bread is, you know where the eggs are, you know where you know. So therefore, you go there. Now, obviously, maybe that's not the best example, cost of living and all the rest of it. But I think the same is true. If you look at some of the CPO sites now, they've started to establish a brand. They've started using shelters in order to put out colour, advertising, protection, all these things that are nice to have at the moment. But I truly believe that a well-presented, designed site will increase utilization, which is what the CPO wants. And it's something that is demonstrated.
Is there evidence to that effect, Mike? Is there evidence to that effect?
Yeah.
And you and I both have that gut feeling, that sense that we would use it more. Is there science behind that?
Yeah, of course. If we look at, let's take train stations, for example, that are in close proximity. So I think London... TrueCharge and TrueForm do a lot of business with Transport for London. So we get involved in all their stuff. Now, if we look at bus shelters or trains or subway stations, there's a marked difference to the footfall and the traffic, the human traffic, that goes through well-developed sites that are safe, presentable, look the part, feel like somebody's invested and bothered about the passenger. They get used more than the dusty old sites that, you know, it's just a pole in the ground with a bus number on it, no shelter and a broken, burnt plastic bench. They don't get used as much. So we've got, as a business, as a group, we know it works. We know that presentation will drive traffic. Now, the EV world is still hung up on utilization, dwell times, blah, blah, because they need that to prove to the board or to sell to the board that their trajectory is the right one. But there's all these other things that will help, but they can't prove it. So therefore, it's a difficult sell, which brings us back to what we were saying before. If you can see it, use your skills and your personality and all the other good things to get to show people that it does make a difference. It's nothing to do with just the ROI in the short term. That's what marketing people do. Yeah. Salespeople, ROI, now. How many calls to make that sale? But we're talking about infrastructure here. We're talking about changing how the UK is going to operate and get around. And it's transport infrastructure. It's a big, big thing. We've been at it now 7 years, reasonably, as an industry. And we've only just recently stopped just banging them in the ground. We've started looking a bit further afield and saying, right, well, we need to optimise these sites. Shelters and canopies is one of the ways of doing it. It's not the way. It's not going to double your income. I might do, I don't know. But it's one of the pieces of the jigsaw.
Mike, I was talking to somebody recently And they were giving me a tour of their premises, but it was a very good premises. Lots of focus on sustainability, lots of reduction of carbon usage, increasing of efficiency. They were really proud of what they were doing, and I said to them, I said, look, what is it that's driving your focus on zero emission and reducing carbon impact and sustainability? And quite honestly, they said to me, well, this is a business imperative. We would be daft not to focus on driving the ESG message, because we're supporting businesses in going forward. Is that the same for you, or are there other drivers as well in play from you as a person, but also you as a business?
Okay. So there's two elements there. Another good question, actually, Paul. So for us, the ESG side of it, if you like, starts at the very, very top. Okay. So the board, down to the MD, down to all the different managers, all the departmental heads, we've all got the same thing. We're all saying we want the infrastructure of moving people around cities and around the country to be cleaner and easier. Yeah. Now, because it comes from the top, even when we're in the manufacturing sites and we're talking to the guys that are bending the metal and welding and all this sort of stuff, they've got the same mentality. The delivery guys that go out and get the PCBs and bring them back and all that, they're going in EV vehicles, they're going in EV vans, they're picking up the stuff and they're bringing it back, and it says on the side, we do EV and all. So it's in the DNA of the business, right? And this is it within True Form. True Charge is obviously a division of that. Now, because it's there all the time, it's dead easy. It's just the way we talk to our customers. It's just how we are. So that is a good thing, working for people. It's not about profit. It's about, this is our core business. If we do it right, we'll earn the profit. It's not chasing it. The profit follows you. From a personal point of view, personally, with regards to sustainability and all that, it's a big word, isn't it? Sustainability. It could mean 1,000 things to 1,000 people. So going back to that whole recognise what's around you, I'm not bothered about it by the fluff and the greyness and all the rest of it. Personally, to me, is I will look at things and say, right, if I'm going from A to B, am I doing it in the best way as I can as far as carbon footprints and all that's concerned? So I bought my own EV rather than a company EV to show to a customer, it's me, I'm committed, I'm not being told to by my business, as that. But I also think it's important when I'm speaking to my MD and the board and things like this, that they've got confidence that I actually believe in what I'm doing. It's not just some sort of, let's get on the back of this and get a job. It's something that I'm very passionate about. I will speak to anybody about it at any length, at any level, in any depth. I'm not embarrassed by it. I'm not ashamed by it. And I'll have a conversation with anybody. And I think that's important as well. So that if I do get asked a question by a potential customer, by an existing customer, or by Dave Smith, who I've met somewhere doing something, when I answer it, it's got to be right. And the only way it can be right is if it's what you do. If you're trying to remember scripts all the time, it's not going to work.
Picking that up just now, what are you most proud of having delivered? Because you get it right a lot. What's the one project that you think, yeah, that's got me written all over it?
I don't think it's a project thing. Okay, so again, that sort of project thing is, it's too short term, you know. Oh, we've covered a BBC car park in solar ports, and we provided the. So what? You know, that sort of flag waving, we'll call it flag waving. that side of things is short term. You know, it's when you see people saying we've won this contract, we've won that contract, and that's great. But if you're good at what you're doing, that's the norm. You know, it's like opening a door and saying, hey, everybody, I've just opened a door. Well, that's what they're there for. You know, to me, I think success will be when the industry or, yeah, we'll call it the industry as a generalization, when people start approaching us to talk about protecting their assets and all that as the norm. We've got this site, we're developing this site, we get involved at the beginning. How do we do it? How can we make this better? At the moment, we're having to encourage the conversation. And this is how we know the market is there, because once we encourage it, it works really well. But we want, once people start seeing it as the norm, that will be my success. That'll be when I go, nailed it, I did that. It's impossible to telegraph that across LinkedIn and across, because it is what it is. There's no big fanfare. There's no nothing. It just happens. And I think that's important to me. And that helps with that whole being authentic and being true to what you're doing. There's no need to shout about it in that way. It's about quietly achieving. Yeah. We all know, certainly you guys do, we all know of people who were shouting and smashing it out of the park 3 years ago that just aren't around anymore. But then you've got the ones underneath that were quietly confident, doing the thing, they're still around, they're still doing what they're doing, except they know more now than they did 3 years ago. So that to me is success, hanging around and doing it properly.
Speaking of humility, here's Paul.
I almost interjected us to say to John, that sounds like us. We're always going on about everything.
Yeah, but you're still here. You're still here.
Yeah, we are still here. And over 6 years, actually, now. We've just surpassed 6 years doing the remarkable, wonderful EV Cafe, and it's been fun. And over those 6 years, we've found a way of rewarding good people. And the good people that we speak to on the podcast. Now, we've got a special reward. I need your full attention, young man. There we go. So now I get the chance to present you with the EV Cafe Magic Wand. Look, and there is its lovely little lightning bolt, a mirror almost of the one that I wear. There we go. So, and now it's coming to you, mate. You get this magic wand and you will get to use the magic wand to make a wish all of your own. So whatever it does, I mean, it can be anything. We've had a few, as most listeners will know, we've had everything from a personal chef to world peace. So we've got it all, mate. What would you like to use your one wish for?
Jesus Christ.
Okay, it's a deal. Second
well,
coming.
Absolutely. Done. I was going to say that's, you know.
World peace.
I don't know, really.
You've got professionally and socially, haven't you, really? You've got those sorts of things.
Oh, so you're already going for two, are you?
Professionally, I think we've already covered, right? I just want people to understand that there's more to life than profit and all the rest of it. Nice guys don't come last, okay? They stick around, they do the thing. So I'd like the EV industry, here's a good one. I wish the EV industry would stop banging on about what it's doing and nearly done and the deal that's blah, 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 right? I wish they'd just do what they're talking about, yeah? So everybody's got a big deal on, everyone's got a tender on, everyone's got this deal, everyone's struggling with stop it. It's muddy in the waters, right? Just clear the decks, have a look at what's real, and go and do your best at that thing. Stop faffing about talking what might happen.
Talking twaddle.
Yes.
And the maybes. Yes. I get it. You know, I think it is a really important thing because, you know, we hear very often about the thing that might happen or the thing that's almost there and those kinds of things. There is sometimes, you know, an element that that needs to happen to drive demand, but I totally get that we end up just kind of believing a lot of stuff that's never even seen the light of day.
Yeah, because we've both been around, or we've all been around long enough, we know them, you can sense them. You've been to enough exhibitions, conferences, all that sort of thing. You talk to people and you go, oh, it's interesting. Go away, come back, you meet them at the next conference 2 or 3 months later. How's that doing? Oh, I've changed business. I'm doing it. And you're going, well, I thought this was the big one. You know, I thought. And I think it's because the industry is young and there's that element of fake it till you make it, all that sort of thing going on.
Don't know what you mean.
Well, you can't fake it for 6 years. You're doing all right.
Yeah.
And I just think that once all that's gone, once it's calmed down, the industry can then properly go forward. You know, we can actually come together and actually go and do it. You know, it's the guy who invented the car. You know, he had to put up with the horses and all that sort of stuff. And somehow he had to gain credibility. So he was telling the horse owners that he'd sold 100 cars that month. He hadn't. He'd sold 2. But he had to do something. And I think we're in that sort of phase at the moment. And I wish that phase would be done. Get on with it. And then allow us to sort of, you know, manage the situation properly.
Indeed. Well, Mike, that is a great way. More doing, less talking. I think that is something that we can all get on board with, really.
Just spent 44 minutes talking, yeah. It's passion. I can't help it. I should have put you under pressure and just done a load of one-liners, shouldn't I? Could have done a load of one-liners. You'd either be quicker. Get the questions.
No, out. It would have been very boring. And it has been anything but boring, hasn't it, John?
Yeah, it has. And I think the thing I've discovered, Mike, is that there's an instinctive, you spoke about it. You said you can spot a wrong un, you can spot a good un. And instinctively, when I first met you, you're a very warm, open human being who is genuinely the person that I've come to know and respect. You are a really decent guy. But what I've discovered in you, because we've only ever spoken for short periods, what I've discovered in you today is there's a depth and there's a wisdom in the things that you say that hasn't come about by accident. You have carefully stopped and evaluated and thought about how you go about your business, what you do, and there's an integrity which is right at your very core. You are every bit the decent guy that I first met at our first show together and went, I like him. He's a nice guy. Yeah. You demonstrate through your thinking and your articulation just how decent you are. And the world needs more Mike Seymours.
No, thank you very much, John. Thanks very much. It's nice to be
and
nice.
I, on the other hand, no.
Let's do that. Let's go there.
Well, no, for me, anybody who's driven tanks for a living is super cool in my mind. I mean, you know,
Just for reference there, the driving the tank's the easy bit. That's the okay. bit that sounds cool down the tank park. The true tank soldier, if you ever have the course to come up with this again,
okay.
is anybody who's in the turret, right? So the gunner, the operators and the commanders, that's where it's at.
And did you ever do a little bit of that?
Yeah, you get cross-trained. So the gunnery side is fantastic. Every time you pull the trigger, it's firing the equivalent of a Golf GTI down the range in cost. Seeing the devastation that happens at the other end is awe-inspiring. Digitization, using the computers, the automations, all that sort of thing. Loading the weapon is brilliant. It's active. You get involved. Driving, you just point the thing and it goes where it wants to go. You stop it. Everyone has a load of fun, and then you move it to the next place. So I think tank driving is a little bit overrated.
Mike, I'm desperate to ask this question. I'm quite a physical presence. You too are quite a physical presence. You know, we look each other in the eye more or less. How the hell did you get in and out of a tank? It's hard going, that.
Let's just say I'm a little bit bigger now than I used to be. I'll send you some pictures of me and me doing tank stock in my youth, and you'll go, what the hell happened to this guy?
Well, on that cheery note, we've got to reflect that, as Mike, you know, we love talking to the people, but what has struck me is that you've joined True Charge for a reason, and a reason that, because True Charge makes a sensible difference to the marketplace in what they're bringing. Not everybody's looking for it, but everybody would love it if it were there. And I think this is the thing that the CPOs perhaps need to realise, is that, you know, we want our creature comforts, and those will begin to define which charge points that we go to. So similarly to, like, price drives us to certain charge points, and then comfort is going to drive us to certain other charge points, ease of use, the environment that it's created, the sort of train station analogy that you brought earlier. And I think that is the real comforting fact, that you've got great people skills, you really understand how to get that message across, and you've got a really solid product that's already making a difference in so many other industries, the trains and the buses and all of those kinds of things. And then you can now bring that to bear in the world of charging. And it's desperately needed, in my humble opinion. And I think you are the right man to bring it. And True Charge, with their clear experience in this place, are other people to bring it as well. So, Mike, listen, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for the time that you've given us today and the insight. So, everybody, listen, you have got a ton of other podcasts that you can listen to with insights similar to this on the companies and the people, most importantly, that are working in our sector and making a difference. Today, it's been Mike, but there are 150 or so more podcast that you can listen to. I'm just trying to work out when this might come out. It might be out before the CV show. If it is, go see the CV show. If it's not and you didn't go, you missed it. Anyway, check out our website for whatever's going on in the latest world, and follow us, of course, on LinkedIn and YouTube and all those good places. But until next time, have a great day, everybody, and thanks to my wonderful guests.